This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Everybody, welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. My name is Devon Miller, and today it is my joy to sit in for Patsy, that's with a Z by the way, to be a guest host for today's show. It's already such an absolute pleasure to be here in the studio where Joy on Paper broadcasts from. You might know me as one of the correspondents here for Joy on Paper, where I talk about the latest children's books and authors. And for today's show, I have the absolute pleasure to be talking with two children's authors who are just doing phenomenal things. Our first guest is someone who's not only a children's author, but is a certified TV and film producer, actress, foster care advocate, model, CEO. I could go on and on and on. Everyone, help me welcome Spencina to Joy on Paper.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, it's such a delight to hear your voice again. I know the first time I heard it, we were actually involved with another radio station where we volunteered, and that's how we actually met.
Yes, yes, you're such a pleasure. I think you're the coolest, sweetest person. Oh my gosh, that's been like, what is 2 years ago?
Oh man, it's been a while. It certainly has been a while. And, you know, eventually came to find out that you're a children's author yourself, which is just incredible. And I know you're continuing to do big and incredible things. So thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, not a problem. And thank you very much.
You know, one of the big things that happened to you last month was you actually got to be on daytime on WFLA to actually talk about your books. I mean, before we dive into specifics about your books and whatnot, I mean, how was that to be on daytime? Was that your first ever daytime talk show?
Yes. You know what? I was just super excited because a friend of mine is a TV director for the news, and I just randomly hit him up and I said, you know, I haven't been advocating for foster care for the past couple of years because I've been, you know, so overwhelmed with everything else. And I said, I really got to start back advocating for my babies. So I was like, is there a way you can get me on, you know, on the news to talk about this? And he said, yeah. And I was like, great. So that's kind of how the whole story got started. And I went there. The people were sweet. You know, everybody was nice. It was actually very quick. The thing that took the longest was checking in with security. Everything else was very quick. But I've never been on the news or daytime TV or anything of that sort. You know, as an actress, we do acting, but never really the news. So that was a first for me.
That's awesome. And I think this is your first radio interview, I believe, too.
You know what? That's true, because my other interviews are usually like YouTube, magazines. Yeah, so this is my first actual radio interview.
That is incredible. And, you know, on their website, on WFLA's website, they even brought up the fact that you have written a few children's books. What are the books that you've written and what are they about?
So maybe around 2009, I wrote a book called Where the Watermelons Grow. And it's just a fun rhythm and rhyme book. It's a flowy book for children just so they can have fun. Because I remember as a child, my favorite books were the books with the rhythm and rhyme. So this book is kind of like a rendition of Jack and the Beanstalk, where this little boy plants some watermelon seeds in his backyard, and he's just waiting for them to grow. But then they grow out of control to the point where they're growing through his house, and he's caught in vines. And he has his friend Flo come over, and she tries to help him. And they're, like, chopping up the watermelons, so it's just so fun. And then at the very end of the book, he decides he's just going to eat them all. That's why he's going to get rid of them, because they're just growing out of control. And he passes out from eating too many watermelons. So that's how that book happened.
That is incredible.
I dedicated that book to my first son, my oldest son, who will be 18 in November. But I dedicated that book to him because, you know, he's such a fun, smart child, and he always brings adventure into my life. So.
I love that. And tell us about what is the story of Little David?
Little David. That book holds dear to me. So I have my master's in psychology and my bachelor's in early childhood development. And I started off teaching at a very young age. I started college while I was in high school. So I started teaching, and eventually I started seeing a lot of things happen to children and families, whether they come from good homes, whether they come from what we would deem as a bad home. And elevating from teaching to social services, I went from being involved in the child's education and social-emotional health to being involved in now their mental health and their actual home lifestyle, and being put in control of whether this parent can get their child back or not. So having that kind of responsibility makes you really want to help people even the more, especially when you're a person who cares for people. So one day I became a therapist for children, and I ended up doing therapy for children birth to three. And then eventually I got offered a position teaching children from three and up, and then adults. And one day I just decided, you know, I have so many foster care kids that I am going to write a book for them. And I was writing my book while I was waiting on my client to come into, we had like a private room at the school where we talked to the children. So he came in the room, and I was like, wait a minute. I know of a great way to do therapy with this child. So I told him about my book, and I said, you know what? I want to make this book look more like your situation. So that's how I ended up getting a little boy with that skin complexion and that family dynamic, which was living with the aunt. And I told him, I said, let's make this story more about you than, you know, what I was originally writing. And so the story holds so dear to me because I asked the child, you know, what do you like to do with your aunt? And he said, I like to cook with my aunt. And he has all these great feelings about his parents because children always love their parents. So it was interesting to me because I watched this child unfold through therapy, but also helped me create my book in a sense. And I appreciated every moment of it. But the biggest and most proud moment for me was me telling him about the book, you know, all this time. But he never saw it until the day I came to his house. And at this time, I wasn't even his therapist anymore. I still worked for the company, but I wasn't his therapist because I had moved locations. But I came to his house, and I gave his aunt the book, the very first copy. And, of course, I dedicated the book to him. And the proud look on his face was like, you just made the biggest difference in my life. And that's why that book meant so much to me. And that's why I changed the different endings for each book, because, or for each chapter, I'm sorry, because it, you know, every story starts off the same in the story of Little David, and there are three chapters, but each chapter ends differently. And I wanted to end it in a way that he could look at and say, you know, this could be my life. Because he got adopted by his aunt. His name changed and everything. So he's a completely different person. And I wanted him to know that this could be your future. You don't have to look at the things that happen in your life and look at them negatively. There is a positive end after this tunnel. And his aunt was so happy. He was so happy. I was so happy. And the fulfillment that came in that situation, I can't even explain in words.
That is incredible. I am truly blown away by your story. And I was actually going to ask you about the three different chapters. You know, that was such an interesting way to tell the story. I mean, was it always originally planned to have it this way, to have like three different stories within the book, or was it originally going to be like a separate type series?
You know, it's so funny. I'm the type of person, I write television shows as well. I write books, I write music, I write everything. I've been writing since I was five. I write poems. And I like to do things differently. And so I was just sitting there and I wrote the first chapter and I was like, this isn't enough. It should be more. How could I get through more? How could I make this book a bigger book with more pages and more messages? And it just dawned on me. And I really felt like that was God just telling me, like, this is how you could do it. And I was happy to do that. And some other thoughts crossed my mind, like putting a different character in it. You know, like letting one of the children be a girl. You know, just different things. But I went with the exact same story with different endings because I wanted it to be seen through the eye of the same child so that it would affect people differently.
That is incredible. Such an incredible story, honestly. I want to go back to the story of Where the Watermelons Grow because I also read that book. That one was just amazing to read. It was definitely like a song, like, you know, the song Down by the Bay. That's kind of like what the vibes was giving it to me. You talked a little bit about,
so funny that you say that because literally when I looked up my book one time, that's what came up. That is so funny that you say that.
That is really funny. I mean, and you told us a bit about what the book was about, but what was the inspiration behind that book, Where the Watermelons Grow?
Ooh, oh my goodness. So long ago. You know what? I was supposed to write that book. I wrote the book. So this is what happened. I wrote the book. I just one day had an inspiration to write a rhythm and rhyme book. And since I was working with children, and my bachelor's, like I said, was in early child development, of course, that was my go-to. I'm going to write a book for children that I can read to children because I'm always reading to children, and I love when I read books. And excuse my voice today because, you know, my little angel, she got me sick. My daughter got me sick, but, you know, my voice normally sounds high-pitched and pleasant, but today I sound like I need a lot of tea, so I'm drinking some tea, so excuse me.
Of course.
But I just sat down at the computer. I wrote the book. No pictures, no nothing. I just wrote the words. And when I finished it, I was like, this doesn't seem like enough words, you know? I was like, this is a short book. So I called my friend. She lives in L.A. now, but she was working for a newspaper in a city called Lake Wales. And, she went to school to a college in Lake Wales, and she was working for a newspaper in Polk County. And, they're both in Polk County, actually, but I forget the name of the place she was working for, but she was working for a newspaper. I think it was Winter Haven. And I said, hey, I said, you know, when people write a book, because this is my first book, so I'm like, you know, when people write a book, they need an editor, right? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, can you edit this for me? And she said, sure. And she read the book. She said, it doesn't need editing. And she was like, I'm not going to charge you. You don't have to make me an editor. You're my friend. But it's a great book. I definitely think you should publish it. So the book just kind of sat there. I never did anything with it. 2015, I decided that I was going to actually publish the book. And the heartbreak behind my writing is that usually I lose it all. Some turn of random event that you can't explain makes me lose my material. And you know, as a writer, that's the most hurtful thing can ever happen to you. Mm. When you lose your rights, like, it hurts so bad.
Oh, of course.
Even if you're a musician and you write your song and somebody takes your song, it breaks your heart into a billion pieces. So, you know, I was just so heartbroken from writing. I really, you know, stopped writing for a while. And it was interesting because I just decided, you know what? I need to go back to my first love. And I started writing. And I decided I'm going to publish my book. So I went on Upwork and I found an illustrator, Emily Zyroff and Khadijah Irving. Khadijah Irving did the one for Where the Watermelons Grow. And Emily Zyroff, a lady from Canada, she did the one for the story Little David. So when I found my illustrators, I knew they were the ones. I wanted Where the Watermelons Grow to kind of look like the illustrations from most of the award-winning books. So I showed her some award-winning books, and I said, I want illustrations like this. And when she drew, I didn't even ask her to see a draft. She just did it, the entire thing, and sent it to me, and I was so happy. The child looked just like I wanted him to look. The, you know, main character. Flo looked just like I wanted her to look. Everything was just perfect for me. So I was totally pleased. So I went ahead and published that book. Now with Emily, she sent me drafts for the story of Little Old Baby. But with Khadijah, I didn't ask her for drafts. Mind you, I felt discouraged because both illustrators had life events that happened that took them a while to get my book done, especially with the story of Little David. And I was like, oh my God, this is just great. I'm always having bad luck, and I don't even believe in luck, and I don't even like using the word. But I was like, this is just ridiculous. Why is there so much stagnation and delay? I was like livid. But once I got them, 2016, books were published. So I was very happy, very proud, and I didn't know what I was going to do with them. I didn't know how I was going to sell them, what I was going to do, so I created them on something that was called CreateSpace and Lulu.com. I decided Lulu was too expensive, so I stuck with CreateSpace. That ended up going to Kindle Direct Publishing. So now they're sold on Amazon. I put them on iTunes at one point, but then when you close your iTunes account, they're no longer sold on iTunes. So now they're just on Kindle, Amazon, and just their platforms. They're actually still on Google Play, so you can buy it on your Android, but those are the three places that you could get the book.
That is awesome. You know, I was actually going to ask you about your illustrators, Khadijah Irving and Emily. You know, it sounds like there was so much that went into creating your books. It sounds like it was such a big, long process. I mean, how long did it take you to write those books? And was the process, did you feel like the process was hard?
You know, it's funny. When I write so fast. I can write, for example, I was just writing my new book, which is going to be called My Autobiography, Corruption, and I'm doing another book called God's Promises. These will be adult books. But when I was writing the book, I wrote on notebook paper and a pencil like 10 pages in like 10 minutes. And I had grew calluses on my hands because that's how much I like how I write, how I grow calluses where the pencil goes. So it doesn't take long for me to write a book, no. The process is, you know, waiting on the illustrator, putting it on a self-publishing platform. Those are the things that take forever. But me to write takes seconds. It doesn't take long at all.
And what was one of the most surprising things you learned in creating your books?
I think that's when I started to learn about marketing. I never knew anything about marketing before those books, and I've learned so much about marketing since then. I even became a marketing manager for a radio station. That's how much I knew about marketing once I published those books. So, yeah, I didn't know anything about marketing, and that was very, very important. And it's actually very, very important as an actress because, you know, as an actress, you have a brand, and you have to market yourself. So I've learned all kinds of avenues when it comes to marketing now.
That is amazing. Earlier you mentioned that the story of Little David was so close to your heart. What do you hope that children and families take away from both the story of Little David and Where the Watermelons Grow?
So interesting. I go to Hillsborough County Public Schools and I give out the story of Little David. Sometimes I give out Where the Watermelons Grow, but not all the time. It's a donation through my company, Proud Salvation Learning Center, which before the pandemic, we were contracted to go and do therapy and mentorship with Hillsborough County Schools through a company called Education Rebound. But when COVID happened, that kind of stopped everything. So my nonprofit, which is a 501c3 charitable organization, we were doing that, and then things kind of just stopped. So we were offering tutoring services, and because of, like I said, COVID, we ended up telling people on our website, just go to Education Rebound. So I give out my books now just as donations to children that I know are foster children, to the classes, so that they can... that the children can learn about foster care kids. Because what I see a lot when kids are in classes with other children, they don't know that these children are adopted or in foster care, and they say hurtful things. Or they'll be like, what is adopted? What is foster care? They have a million questions. So I wanted to educate the children in the classroom on what the other child is going through so that these children could have empathy for these foster care kids, so foster care children will have an easier life. I also wanted it to provide healing for these children in foster care. I even read my child book, you know, the story of Little David, to adults that were, you know, aged out of foster care. And the effect that it had on the adults, they cry because the book is so emotional. Everybody loves the book when they read my book. They love the book, especially the story of Little David, because it comes from such an emotional place. And pretty soon I'll be writing a book called Fear for Children. That'll be my next children's book. So, you know, I really believe that helping people is the reason that I'm on this planet. That is the purpose of my life. God has provided me to be a blessing, and that's what I'm aiming for, to just continue to be a blessing. And this, I think it's this August or November, and I know you do it too, go to the schools and do, I know they have the Great American Teach-In, and then they have the Great American Read-In. And one's in August and one is in November. And so this year, I'm going back to those elementary schools that I gave the books to, and I'm going to read to the children.
Wow, that is amazing. And yes, you know, of course, I always go out and read as well. And, you know, hearing you talk about just the big impact that the story of Little David has, you know, did you ever expect that kind of response from your writing? Like, did you ever imagine, like, wow, my writing will have such a big impact on children and families?
Well, when I wrote it, that was the intent. Mm-hmm. But to see it actually happen, I did not expect it to look like that, no.
And what has the response been like for Where the Watermelons Grow?
Well, you know, people love the book. They like it because the book is with children of color. So a lot of times we're looking for books. As a teacher, I can tell you, we're always looking for books, for multiracial books, multi-ethnic books, books with children of color or people of color, because they're trying to provide more of that. And excuse me one second. I'm sorry.
Of course.
Ooh, sorry, I had to spit. The mucus is coming out of me. But so having that book, that particular book, it was very popular when it came to the multi-ethnic part of education. And then they're also always looking for rhythm and rhyme books. So my book was popular at my workplace because the teachers, you know, were using it. And then as I expanded, you know, just watching the book, reading it to my students when I became a teacher, reading it to my students when I became a substitute, just seeing them smile, and they love the book, and watching little kids laugh, like, they think it's so funny that the watermelons grew so much that he was stuck and his hair grew into a fro. And they're like, ha, 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 that's so funny, his hair is a fro, you know. So I love to put smiles on children's faces because I love their innocence and I love to protect children. I'm a child lover and I'm a big child at heart. So for me, watching a child smile,
That is incredible. Just hearing your story of how you're making children smile and stuff like that. You know, I gotta say thank you so much. We could be here all day, but I gotta say thank you so much for coming on Joy on Paper today. Real quick, for anyone that wants to follow you along on your journey, where can they find you on social media?
So IG, Instagram, I am Spencina Official. Also Snapchat, I think I'm Spencina Official. And I am The Real Spencina, I think, on Twitter.
If
anybody wants to find me, they can go on www.spencina.com. Sorry.
That's okay. We love having you, Spencina. Thank you so much for joining us again. We wish you all the best. Where the Watermelons Grow and the Story of Little David, a story about child removal, is available for purchase right now on Amazon. Thank you so much, Spencina, again.
Thank you.
Coming up on Joy on Paper, we'll have a special interview with children's author Gramps Jeffrey of I Don't Want to Turn 3. But first, let's pass it over to Bria Burton, another correspondent here on Joy on Paper, for your latest futuristic fiction fix. Check it out.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes an L. Ron Hubbard's Writers of the Future semi-finalist, released in 2021. Awakened by T.E. Bradford, available in print and ebook. Now, let's download the book buzz. In a bleak world where manufactured anodic commandos, or Macs, mercilessly hunt and kill humans, a wounded resistance fighter named Kara comes face to face with one of these machines. If her injury doesn't kill her, this Terminator will. But the Mac has a wound of his own and has short-circuited. Stuck on the wrong side of the wall, distant drones approach, sealing her death sentence. A wild idea convinces her to try and rewire the Mac. Maybe she's wrong, but she's dead either way. The gamble pays off, and he's activated again, carrying her out of danger to a safe location. But the rewiring did more than just a factory reset. He's behaving strangely, offering sympathy, doctoring her wound, and explaining things that shouldn't be possible about the war being fought over her now desolate homeland. Her hatred for these machines wavers in light of the unbelievable change. The journey back to her base through enemy territory won't be possible without him. With each passing hour, the test of whether he'll remain a friend or revert back to foe creates a delicate dance between human and machine. This high-tension, compact novella offers emotional punches right alongside the action, all while infusing themes of truth and spiritual meaning all the way to its climactic ending. Author T.E. Bradford is a writer, singer, songwriter, and cancer survivor. In her heart, she feels that her gift of writing is a little piece of magic, and that it is both her privilege and grandest adventure to find new ways to stretch a hand out to touch the wonder of this vast universe God created. This is Bria Burton with your Futuristic Fiction Fix, signing off.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey everybody, welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. My name is Devon Miller, one of the correspondents here for Joy on Paper, and today it is my joy to sit in for Patsy, that's with a Z by the way, to be a guest host for today's show. Earlier in the show, I teased that we'd have another children's author on the program. Our second guest is someone who has contributed to over 100 articles for the Huffington Post. They've written a highly acclaimed business book titled The Secret of Retailing, How to Beat Walmart. And now they've written a children's book called I Don't Want to Turn 3. Gramps Jeffrey, welcome back to Joy on Paper.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
Oh, man, it is delightful to hear your voice. It's so great to have you back on the program, especially to discuss your book, I Don't Want to Turn 3. You know, you've mentioned that it was inspired by your grandkids, and I've seen the wonderful pictures of you reading your book to them. And I just want to know, how does it feel that you have this impact on not just your grandkids, but children in general when it comes to reading and literature?
Well, you kind of think about what are parents' responsibilities in today's world. You know, what is it that we as parents and grandparents need to do to make these kids better? You know, obviously, we're in charge of making sure they get food and clothing and a place to live, and they provide financial support, medical care, and opportunity to receive an education. But you know, what else can we do? What else can we do? So, parents are the most influential people for our children. You know, they're the ones that instill honesty, responsibility, kindness, independence, respect, positive thinking, creativity, health and eating exercises, you know, and how they can learn from failure and how to have fun. So, you know, reading to kids is just all part of this process.
Wow, that is amazing. And this story was created during the pandemic. prior to the pandemic, was it ever a thought to write a children's book one day?
Well, you know, my focus before the pandemic was not on writing a children's book. It was, building businesses and creating opportunities for other people. But when the pandemic hit and everything shut down, you know, I had the opportunity to have all six of my grandkids here at our house for about 6 weeks. So that really gave me a chance to kind of watch them and how they interact and so forth. I got to tell you, what a trip, because all six of these kids had completely different personalities. You know, but the one thing they did have in common was their sense of curiosity and how they would accomplish things. And so, you know, watching them grow year to year really is the basis of the book and what gave me the idea that what's happening in my family, because this book is based on a true story, has got to be happening in most families around the world. So that's why I decided to put it down on pen and paper.
It's such a relatable book. It's such a book that everyone can enjoy together, that honestly, a lot of people can take away a lesson from it. What do you hope children and families take away from reading your book?
Well, you know, the real question is, in this book is, at what age do you begin to take responsibility for your actions? Is it 3 years old? Is it 13? Is it 23? You know, I'm a baby boomer, and I got plenty of people 63 years old that still don't take responsibility for their actions. Yeah, so that's really at the heart of the book. Is how does a family, you know, and the mom and dad are very influential in this book, you know, get their children to start taking responsibility for their actions?
Wow, that is amazing. You know, I have to ask, as the children's correspondent of Joy on Paper, and of course, given that the title of the book is I Don't Want to Turn Three, I would love to know, what were some of your favorite children's books to read at that age?
Oh, you know, all the Dr. Seuss books. You know, they really had influence on me because of the rhyming, and it just was a good feeling when I was reading Dr. Seuss or having Dr. Seuss read to me, because, you know, 3 years old, you can't read. At least I couldn't. And so, you know, that really was the biggest influence.
And I imagine, did any of those books when you were three, did that have an influence on I Don't Want to Turn Three?
Well, that had an influence, but, you know, as a baby boomer trying to understand how the world has evolved since I was 3 years old, you know, this is also part of the story. You know, when you think about in my generation or my parents' generation, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have cable TV. We didn't have remotes. I was my dad's remote. He said, son, go change the channel. You know, that's what I was. So life is so different today than it was when I was growing up. So the influence then obviously has influence today too.
What was one of the most surprising things that you've learned when creating I Don't Want to Turn Three?
One of the most surprising things I learned is that it's necessary for us to teach children how to think. Not what to think, but how to think. If we can lead them in a way for them to begin to start to think, you know, they're just going to be so much smarter as they grow up. So that was probably one of the most important things to me is, you know, how do we get kids to think and make decisions on their own? Going back to the idea, you know, when do you take responsibility? And so that was probably the most important lesson I learned.
And why do you think it's so important, the lesson that you created in I Don't Want to Turn Three? Why do you think it's so important for children and families to learn about it?
Well, you know, I guess the real crux of this is that families have got to be reading to their children. I mean, you know, with the outside influences that this generation has, you know, as soon as they've come out of the womb, they're exposed to the internet and iPhones and all kinds of electronic things. So it's important for the older generations to offset that great information, because, again, I think this is going to be the greatest generation this country has ever produced, because, you know, they're getting information as soon as they're born. I didn't get onto the internet till I was 40. So, you know, it is a big, big, big difference. So, but it's important for us as parents and grandparents to get them into the reading habit, because there's all kinds of benefits. I mean, one of the benefits If you picture you've got a little kid, 3 years old, sitting on your lap, you got him for 20 minutes, you're sitting opening a book, and, you know, obviously there's 100 great books out there. I wanted everybody to buy my book, but obviously there's 100 other great ones out there. To get them, I mean, the first thing that happens is you create a bonding time with children when you're reading with them. You know, it's just a nice time to spend together with you just for 20 minutes to read a book together. Another reason that we should be reading books to our kids every single night or even during the day is it supports listening skills. Now, you know, you as a radio personality and me as a business guy, we know that the listening skills are our number one skill we have, because the more we listen, you know, the better we can communicate, the better we can sell, the better we can inform people. So, you know, if we can teach kids when they're 2, 3, 4 years old by sitting on our laps, reading a book, you know, how to listen, this is going to pay off for them down the road. You know, another reason we should be reading books to kids, you know, is because of the cognitive and language development that comes out of reading books. There's plenty of words in these books these kids don't understand, so you get a chance to explain them. There's plenty of these words in books I don't understand. I got to go look up. But, you know, it's a way for us to start that whole thing, expanding the variety and number of words that they're able to use. And then another reason is because it creates attention span for those 20 minutes. I mean, 2 and 3, 4-year-old kids, they're bouncing off the wall all day long. If you can get them in your lap and have the key concentration and self-discipline skills, you know, they'll be learned by sitting and reading books. So I encourage all of your listeners to make that effort to go out and get books and read books to their kids, because it's got a lot of learning skills that will help them throughout life.
You know, you mentioned, you know, there's so much you want children and families to take away. What has the response been like for I Don't Want to Turn 3? Have parents come up and been like, oh my goodness, you have helped my children so much with their listening skills? Or have children come up and been like, wow, I've learned so much from you from reading this book?
Well, I think the most important lesson, another lesson, is to question. To you know, again, if we're teaching our children how to think, we need to continue to question them. You know, when you're reading a book, you want to sit down and ask them, even before you pick up the book, what do you think is going to happen in this book? You know, and then as you're reading the book, you want to ask them, who are the characters? Where are the settings? Keep questioning. Keep asking kids, you know, because it helps them think. Does anything in this book sound familiar to you? You know, what was your favorite part of this book? So we need to continue to keep asking questions, because if we continue to keep asking questions when they're young, then they will continue to keep asking questions as they grow older.
That is awesome. You mentioned, you know, it's important for children to get into the habit of reading. I'd love to know, do you have any advice for anyone that might be reading your book and they might want to become an author themselves? Do you have any advice for how they might want to get into this business and industry?
That's an interesting question, because, you know, either you want to be a writer or you don't want to be a writer. You can't force someone to be a writer. It's got to be a passion. You have to have a passion for this. You have to have a passion for your subject. You have to have a passion to take the time, because you know, you don't write a book in 10 minutes. It takes a good portion of your life to write a book. So, you know, if you're going to write a book, just keep in mind that, you know, you become a role model for others. You know, if you're an author, or if you're the star of the book, or if you're part of the book, you know, much like parents are the role models for their children. You know, if kids reflect what they see in their parents, especially the 2, 3, 4-year-olds. You know, if you say a cuss word, I guarantee you, you're going to hear the child make a cuss word 3 or 4 more times that day, just because they imitate you. You know, and obviously, the best way to avoid that is mistake by saying a cuss word. You want to make sure that you follow up with things that they like bananas and dinosaurs and, you know, and movies and things like that. But children imitate you. You know, if you're on your screen all the time, you know, they're going to be on their screen. If you're watching TV, they're going to be watching TV. So make sure that you are an influence for these children. Take them outside and play. Show them to do that. You read a book, so they read a book. So, you know, if you're going to get into being an author and so forth, you know, you've got to be disciplined and be a role model to make sure that what you say is reflective of really, truly what you believe.
Are there any more books coming soon from you?
Well, interestingly enough, I'm working on I Don't Want to Turn 4, but my 9-year-old granddaughter, who was one of the stars of the book Olivia, just turned 9, and she came to me last month, and she says, "Gramps, I got a great idea for our next book." I said, "What is it?" She says, "I don't want to turn 10. I said, "Wait, why don't you want to turn 10? She says, "Well, you know, I'm going to have to learn to drive. And, you know, I don't know if I really want to do that. That's another 7 years away. Why are you even thinking about it now?" She says, "And I got to start thinking about picking out a college. I don't know where to go." I said, "That's another 9 years away. Why do you want to think about that?" So she's got the idea of a book, I Don't Want to Turn 10. But when you think about it, there's plenty of other ideas. I don't want to turn 30. I don't want to turn 60. I don't want to turn 80. You know, we all have those moments in our lives where we look back and say, you know, I don't know if I really want to go forward. So that's really the series of books that I'll be attacking next.
That is awesome. It definitely does sound like it can be this long line of children's books for different ages. And it very much does answer this scary question, especially for kids. You know, what will I be like when I'm older? You know, I'm going to be very different. And it definitely, I think these books will definitely help kids understand like what it's like to be a little older and help them to not see that, you know, being older is not so scary.
Yeah, well, you know, it comes as the glass half full or half empty. And hopefully we are raising a generation that says the glass is half full. Let's go forward.
Mm-hmm. How do you find, like, when it comes to the process of writing your stories, I mean, was the process even hard? I mean, how are you able to find the joy when it comes to writing your story on paper?
Well, the joy really comes from the reaction. You know, it happens to be a true story that and if you take a look at the book, there are all the pictures are based on photographs that I took, and I sent them to the illustrator, and she made them into more cartoonish looking. But it really was based on the story where, you know, Jordan was taking everybody's toys, and, you know, they didn't know it, and finally they discovered it on his birthday, and Olivia came up with the idea that they should give away all these toys and all his birthday presents and all their toys to the homeless kids downtown. And, you know, that really happened. And so, you know, I think the motivation comes from the story itself. I mean, and then the other motivation is once the book was written, it was fun watching how the kids reacted. Like, for instance, they were all over here about a month ago, and Olivia grabbed one of the books, and she grabbed two of her cousins, and for some reason they went and they hid underneath my desk, and she started reading the book to them. And they didn't know I was over on the side kind of listening, and as she's reading the book, you know, Jackson says, "That's me with my dinosaurs." And Levi says, "That's me in the bathtub." And so you see that, you know, they're involved too because they can relate because it happened to them. So, you know, as you're thinking about writing a book, just kind of keep in mind, how does it affect other people?
And you also brought up the illustrator as well. I mean, what was that process like? Was it hard?
No, it wasn't hard because I had the photographs. So in other words, you know, obviously she used a lot of her imagination to enhance them, but, you know, the cover of the book is Levi and Jackson in the bathtub. That's where they were. That's where they loved to be, you know. Levi loved to wear his goggles, and they loved to play with their sea creatures in the bathtub. I mean, that's a picture. So she took that idea and made it more fun.
That is awesome. And I'd also love to know, how are you further getting the message out there about, like, the lesson you want children and families to learn? I mean, how are you incorporating your books in, you know, initiatives and stuff like that? Or are you?
Well, you know, if any of your listeners want to talk about it, please, I'd love to do it. My email is grampsjeffrey@gmail.com. So if any listeners want to continue the conversation, please email me and we can do that, because obviously it's a message that I want to get out there, but the real message I want to get out there is the grandparents have got to get more involved in the raising of these grandkids. I mean, you know, we're in a generation now where You know, 30% of grandparents are classified as remote, which means, you know, they really aren't involved in their kids, grandkids being raised. I mean, that's one out of every three grandparents. You know, they rarely see their grandchildren. They may have some contact on birthdays or maybe on a holiday. But, you know, their philosophy is, I raise great kids. My kids will take care of my grandkids. I got my own life to live. My mission is to try to get more of those involved because, again, you know, we are the influence that's going to help enhance what these kids are learning online, and we've got to take all the knowledge that we've learned over the last 40, 50 years and implant it so they become the greatest generation that's a well-balanced generation.
Gramps, it has just been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming to Joy on Paper today.
Oh, thanks for inviting me. I do appreciate the opportunity.
We love having you. And before you go, I just gotta ask. I mean, if anyone wants to follow you along on your journey to keep in touch with all that you're doing, how can they find you?
Oh, you can come to my site, which is Gramps Jeffrey at GrampsJeffrey.com, or my other site is IDon'tWantToTurn3.com. Or again, please email me at GrampsJeffrey@gmail.com. They can buy the book, I Don't Want to Turn Three, on Amazon, or Barnes & Noble, and 100 other places, too. So, yes, please keep in touch.
Of course. We definitely will. We love having you back on the show. I Don't Want to Turn 3 is available for purchase on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever else you can get it. Thank you so much, Gramps Jeffrey, for coming on again. It's been an absolute blast.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And of course, thank you to everyone so much who has been listening to this episode. It's been such an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you so much to Patsy and everyone here at the radio station. You know, as Patsy always says, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very lucky, your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or series on the Hallmark Channel. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to see previous episodes, or keep in the know about future Joy on Paper episodes, be sure to visit our website at radio-joyonpaper.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Joy on Paper. Thank you so much to Patsy for allowing me to guest host today. Thank you so much to Big Ed, who is over in the control room. And of course, thank you to all the wonderful people involved in Joy on Paper who make this program such a joy to be a part of. I hope I was able to provide a little joy in your day today, but we'll see you next time on Joy on Paper. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.